To have the chairman of the board of the Orthodox Union, who is here in Israel actually for just completed a conference of presidents of the major organization, Jewish organizations around the world. Mr. Savitsky is a dear friend of the yeshiva, has spoken here before. He has spoken here numerous times before. It's guys have come to me afterward and said that was the best speech we heard of the year. I don't want him to disappoint, but this could be the most important speech you hear this year. Happens to be a very person very close to my heart, as he's also my uncle. Without further ado.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's always great coming here to Torah Shraga, the best yeshiva there is in Israel, right? That's what I've been told. Is that correct? No? That's what I think. I think it's one of the best, that's for sure. And the reason I came tonight, and as Rabbi Olstein was telling you, I've had the great zchus this past, actually 2 weeks, to travel to be in Spain with the president conference to meet the king and the president. You know, Spain just rescinded their 500-year decree 500 years ago in 1492. They expelled all the Jews, and now they're welcoming us back. I'm not sure why, but officially, if any of you are from Sephardi, you could prove your heritage. You can now get a Spanish citizenship. So, if you want it, it's available. And spending time this week, meeting with a lot of people meeting with people here in the government, the prime minister, president, generals, and so on. As someone said at one of our meetings, over here in the Middle East, it's very hard to predict the past. Things change every day. Things are always evolving. But there are certain things that are constant. And when I knew that I was coming, and Rabbi Olshin invited me to come to speak, he said, what do you want to speak about? So I said, I could speak about a lot of things, but I want to speak about one issue. One issue which, unfortunately for me, maybe for the generation of Rabbi Olshin, maybe some of your Rabbeim, we will not be zocher to see, although we dream about it, we yearn about it, we think about it, but I thought maybe, somehow in this room tonight, maybe there's one person that will say, you know something, this is something I could do. This is something I could personally do to change Klal Yisrael and the Jewish people. And that's a topic which I'm sure all of you probably hear so much about. You come to Eretz Yisrael, you hear a speech about Achdus. People talk about it. It's like the weather. People talk about it all the time, but nothing ever really happens. So you keep continuing and things keep going. And there was a time when I used to think, what does Achdus mean? And I used to have this cute little expression. I used to say, it's really, unity is not uniformity. Not everyone has to be exactly the same. But I learned that's really not what Achdus is. Achdus really is three things. It's understanding, it's tolerance, and it's compromise. It's those three things. Understanding, tolerance, and compromise. And if you don't have those three things, you can never achieve Achdus. Because if it's always going to be your way, completely, 1,000%, if I don't get everything I want, then I can't go along with it. 80% is not good enough, 75% is not good enough. If I don't have it all, then it doesn't make any sense. You know, in the Pirkei Avos, we know the Hillel said, if I'm not for myself, I'm number one, who else should be? Who else is going to take care of me? But if I'm only for myself, then I don't know if I'm so great. And if not now, when? What does it really mean? Well, let me explain what it means. You see, the word ani, me, is a very, very expandable word. It can grow, it could shrink, it all depends on what you want. When you start off in life, you can't help it. It's all about you. It's about you. It's about me. Everyone takes care of me. Everyone feeds me, they clothe me, they pay for me, they do whatever else happens. But as you get older, that word starts expanding. And all of a sudden, maybe it's more to do with your parents and you together. You know, I always laugh when I always hear people say, I say, well, what are you going to do about next year? It's always the conversation that goes on. Should I bet? Should I? Shana Gimel, what's going on? Well, I really want to stay, but my parents really don't want me to stay. Or something like that. And that's really not the right answer. The answer really is, it's not I want to do this and my parents want this. It's ani, which now includes you and your parents together. It's a collective decision. And sometimes it's a personal decision. Maybe it's a monetary decision, a financial decision, a family decision. But it's not just you. It's not, okay, it's what I want and it's what they want. It's what we want. Because the word ani now means me and maybe my parents. And as you get a little bit older, in a few years, hopefully you'll meet somebody and decide this is the person you want to spend your life with. And all of a sudden that word ani is not just going to be me, it's going to be me and my spouse. When you say the word ani, it's really a collective word. And as you keep growing, it becomes your children, and maybe eventually it becomes the yeshiva your kids go to, it becomes the shul you daven in, it becomes the community, it becomes Klal Yisrael, and all of a sudden, the word ani keeps expanding, it keeps growing and growing and growing, and that's why, when it says, imein ani li'mili, that's okay, because ani la'atzmi ma'ani, but when that word ani is still just me, later on in your life, when you're 25, when you're 30, when you're 40, when you're 80, if the word ani just still means me, then ma'ani, then what am I? I'm really nothing. So the word has to keep growing and expanding every single time. And the Kohen Gadol, if those of you who study the Daf Yomi know that when we just finished Masech the Yuma, now we're in Sukkah, with Chiper Ba'adova, they saw the Kohen Gadol is constantly saying he wants to have a kapara, not just for him, but for all of Klal Yisrael. And it says it many, many, many times. And someone gave me a good explanation. They said every single time he says it, the word keeps growing. Beiso is not, maybe it's initially it's him, maybe initially it's all the Kohanim, maybe it's all the Leviim, maybe it's all the people who work in the Beis HaMikdash, but eventually the word keeps growing and growing and growing and growing till eventually it's everybody. So that's what I mean. When I say the word Achdus, what I'm really talking about is something which means a lot more than just getting along with yourself and understanding what you want. It's much more. The word itself tells you what it's all about. It starts with an aleph, it ends in a tuf, it starts from the beginning of the alphabet, it goes to the very end of the alphabet. That's what Achdus is all about. And so the question really is, and which what I want to explore with you tonight, in a few minutes, so what's the big deal about it? Like someone said to me one time, listen, the Jews have been fighting for years, it's nothing new, so what do we have to have Achdus for? So I want to attempt tonight to tell you a little bit about Achdus, to tell you about why I think it's really not just a nice thing, but it's actually crucial for the survival of the Jewish people, and then what I think I would suggest can be done about it, and then some things maybe you can do about it on a personal level. So, the Torah tells us, in Parshas Bamidbar, the story starts. It's an amazing story, and the first year that the Jewish people spend in the desert, one of the most incredible stories in all of Jewish history. One of the most tumultuous years that you'll ever find. And now the Torah tells us in Bamidbar, guess what? It's now the second year. It's the second month, the month of Iyar. And God decides to count the Jewish people. And how does He do that? He does it in a very strange way. A very strange way. Ish al diglo, each shevet comes before and they count the shevet. And each one comes with their own flag. And mine Yehuda is blue and this one is red and this one is green and this one has their own symbol. Everyone has their own symbol. That's how he counts the Jewish people. Now let me ask you a question. If you were God, you're trying to unite this disparate group of people. They've been slaves for 210 years or whatever it is. And now they're coming out finally. B'nai Yisrael Yotzim B'yad Ramah. They walk out of the desert. And how are they doing it? Hey, number one. You ever see it? I guess the people who were fans of Denver weren't going, we're number one after the Super Bowl. But somebody always is going to do, we're number one, right? That's how they are. We're number one. So here we go. The B'nai Yisrael leaves. They're number one. They feel great. And all of a sudden God decides to make this little intramural. We have an intramural. Well, Shevet Yehuda against Shevet Shimon and Levi and Yisachar. Everybody competing against one another. Does that make a lot of sense? Is that how you build unity? How it is when you, wherever you live in your own community, when you have your local basketball game or whatever else you're having, Isn't it always, wow, the rivalry is unbelievable. And if you're a baseball fan, when the Boston Red Sox play the New York Yankees, it's unbelievable, the rivalries. Rivalries don't create unity. They create disunity. I remember my wife and I spent the Shabbos in Savannah, Georgia. And I remember that Shabbos was a big game. I don't even know, it was a tremendous football game. And I remember the rabbi said to me, listen, Friday night we'll have a big crowd. Shabbos morning, they're not going to be here. They're all going to the game. I don't know who was playing against who, but it's the biggest, Florida against Georgia. It's unbelievable. This is what happened. So it doesn't create unity. Why would God want to create disunity among a people that needs unity? So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in his Sefer Emes Yaakov explains beautifully. He says, the Torah is not written in chronological order. All of you who followed these past few weeks, Terumah, Tzitzaveh, and so on, you see it goes back and forth and back and forth. Well, the same thing happens here. In Parshas Bamidbar, it starts the second year and the second month. What happened in the second year and the first month? Nisan, the Mishkan. The Mishkan is now erected. The Jewish people have a centrality. They have a place to go. Rav Yaakov says, once you had Nisan, once you had the Torah, once you had the Mishkan, then each individual Shevet could have their own special talent. This one is more musical, and this one is more spiritual, and this one likes to learn Tanakh, and this one likes to learn Bris Torah. Whatever it is, it doesn't make a difference, because once you have the centrality of the Torah, then you could just have a united people. And that's basically what he was saying. And that's what unity is all about also. And you know, Rav Soloveitchik used to always talk about the fact that when we had Shlosh Regolim, when all the Jews came from all over, one of the reasons they had it, he said, is because you got to meet everybody else. Otherwise, how do you know other people? Because you see, you know, you wind up going to the same places with the same people. You go to the same schools, the same camps, the same yeshivas, live in the same communities, and so you never get a chance to meet anybody else. You don't know what anybody else is like. That's not good for the Jewish people. It's not good when we have that kind of a society. And so we have to try to change that. You know, we're coming up now, we're in Adar already. So already we're in the spirit of Purim. And if you think about it, what was it? What was the central theme that Haman said to Ahasuerus? What did he tell him? Yesh am mefuzar mufurad ben amim. There is a nation, there is a group of people, they're scattered, they're not together. They're all alone. They don't care about one another. We could attack them. We could destroy them. That's what we can do. But later on, when everything is bad, when everything is going south, when the Jewish people are under the gun, what happens? Mordechai comes to Esther and she says, Lech kenos es kol ha-Yehudim. Gather all of the Jews. Call everybody. I don't care what they look like. I don't care what yeshiva they go to. I don't care if they wear a kippah strugah or a black hat or they don't wear one. Or if they say the bracha for the Medina or if they don't say it or whatever else it is. It doesn't make a difference. Lech kenosis kol Yehudim. Gather all of the Jews together because we are in trouble. Deep trouble. And we need everybody. And you see, that's the way it always is. The way it always is with unity is that when you're in trouble, you have unity. That's pretty good. You know, that's pretty good. Unity when you have trouble. You know, in the community that I live in, some of you probably maybe live there, I don't recognize some of you, I may do recognize, in the Five Towns, about 2 years ago we had a big hurricane, Hurricane Sandy. I'm sure all of you know about it, you've heard about it, some of you experienced it. It wasn't pleasant, it wasn't fun, many people got displaced, houses were destroyed, and all of a sudden now, people gathered together. Lech kenosis kol Yehudim. Everyone gathered together. It was an incredible sight. People were helping one another, and it's beautiful, and it's wonderful, and there's no question it happens in the Jewish people. But the real question is, once the flood subsided, once the waters went away, did you still have the same achdus? I see someone wearing a beautiful DRS shirt. I remember when, long time ago, before the school even opened, DRS even opened, there was another high school that was going to open in the community also, at the same time. So some people in the community suggested, wouldn't it be a good idea to maybe have one high school? We'll have Limudei Kodesh in the morning, each one will have their own, and in the afternoon, they'll share a campus, they'll share principals, we'll save money, and of course the answer was no. We can't do it because we're different. Everyone is a little different. Our hashkaf is a little different and so on. And you know, if you were there when they had the flood, the school was flooded out, and so they had to go to another yeshiva, and they spent time 2 months in another yeshiva, and that's where they were. And when it was over, they had a kumbaya. Everybody was loving it. They were dancing together. The schools were saying how wonderful it was, how great it was. And I didn't see anybody converting. I didn't see one kid become non-Jewish because of the fact that they were together with kids from another school. So you know what? You don't have to be in the same exact place, because what I'm really saying is that we don't have to wait for tragedy. So I say, what do we want? Do we want Achdus by, I called it then, Achdus by Sandy or Achdus by love? What do you think? What's better? Is it really so great to have Achdus by Sandy when there's catastrophic events going on? At the OU, where I had been zochet to be the president and now the chairman of the board for so many years, we have an organization called Yachad. Some of you probably know it. It's a wonderful organization. We deal with disadvantaged children. We deal with special children, special needs children. And we have a convention every year. 600, 700 people. And every time I come, people say to me, isn't this unbelievable? Look at this Achdus. It's amazing what goes on. People who are not religious, people who are religious, doesn't make a difference. We're together. And I said, yes, it is wonderful, and it's great, and I'm happy about it. But everyone's here because they have, unfortunately, a tzara, they have a problem, they have someone they have to deal with, and so there's a commonality. But if that wasn't happened, would we also have the same kind of Achdus? So that's really what we're really talking about. So I think for us, the question really is, why is it so important? So why is it so important? Okay, so we don't have the Achdus, it's not so important. I want to tell you why it's important, to me. And I don't know about you guys, but I like numbers a lot. So how many people do you think there are in the world? Anybody have any idea? How many people are there in the world? How many? There are 7 billion people. Very excellent, very good. Get that guy in. Okay. So we have 7 billion people in the world. How many Jews are there? There's about 14 million Jews. We make a lot of noise. People think there are a lot more of us than there are, but we only have about 14 million people. Now, you understand that in China, they don't round off to 14 million. It's not even a significant number. So who are we? We're nobody. We're a nothing in the whole world. In the New York Times, a few weeks ago, there was an article about different religions. So here it is. You want to talk about problems? Okay. Who do you think, how many Muslims do you think there are in the world? 1.6 billion. 1.6 billion Muslims, 14 million Jews. You like the odds so far? Sounds pretty good. How about another one? Here's another statistic that's going to make you feel really great. Who is the oldest religion as far as the average age is what? Jews. 35.6 years is the average age of the Jews. Thank God for you guys. Okay? I'm bringing it up, you're bringing it down. Okay. What about Muslims? The youngest, 23.2. So here you go. We've got this great situation going. 1.3 billion of them, 14 million of us. Their age is about 23. Ours is about 36. If you were a betting man, would you bet the odds? I don't think you really would. So how do we exist? What happens to us? God tells us in Parshas Bechukosai, God tells us the answer. And it's so simple. And it's so straight. This is what God says. Listen to this. If you follow what I say and you do what I say and you're united together, v'rotchu mikem chamisha mea, u'mea mikem revava yirdofu. If you follow what I say, what's going to happen is that you're going to have a situation where you're going to have 5 of you will be able to defeat 100. That's a ratio of 1 to 20. 100 could defeat 10,000. Rashi, who understands everything, questions and says, wait a second, the numbers don't work. 1 and 1 do not equal 2. The numbers don't work. And what does Rashi say? You know what he says? Ein adoma mu'atama osim es haTorah l'merubim osim es haTorah. You can't compare when a small group follows the Torah, Barovam Hadras Melech, or when a large group follows it. Because you see, every time you add another person, you're not adding another person. You're changing the total scheme of the entire package. Those of you who may live in California are familiar with earthquakes. You know, when you listen and you hear about an earthquake, and you hear it's a 7.0 on the Richter scale, you say, oh, wow. And then someone says, no, it's 7.1. Well, you know the difference between a 7.1 and a 7.0? The difference is that little difference of 0.1 had greater power than the entire 7.0. And if it's 7.2, it's greater than the entire 7.1. That's how exponentially, that's how the numbers go up. So you see what happens is that when the Jews get together, when they're united, when they together are together, ish echad b'lev echad, the power is unbelievable. 100 could defeat 10,000, 101 maybe a million. That's our haftacha. This is what God's telling you. Listen, guys, it's simple. You get together, you love one another, you show respect for one another, you care about one another, I'll take care of you. Don't worry about the numbers. The numbers don't mean a thing. The numbers are going to go away. You could do whatever ever you want. You have no problems at all. Simple. Simple mathematics. And it works. And to me, this is the greatest haftacha that we have. Because if I didn't have that, I would tell you, I walk around right now and I have my head down because I would say it's over. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. So that's the reason we need. That's the reason we need to have achdus. And so, the question is this. I only come here, I'm talking to from people. I'm talking to B'nai Torah. I'm talking to people who are religious. People say to me, what about all the other Jews? And I say to them the following. We set the trend. We set the trend. We say every single day in our davening, Oseh shalom b'rumav v'yaseh shalom aleinu al kol b'nei Yisrael. Who's the aleinu? God. We say God who is in the earth, the heavenly abode. You who could make peace with everybody, with the angels. It's not easy to make peace with angels, by the way. Every single angel has their own derech. They have their own little hashkafa. Each one has their own thing. The angel of chesed is not too interested in the angel of din. It doesn't work. They're two diametrically opposed. God found a way of making it all work. God, you who made the angels live together in harmony. You know what? Oseh shalom v'yaseh shalom aleinu. First to us, the people who study Torah, the people who are involved with Shabbos and Kashrus, you first find a way of making us, and then everyone else will follow suit. Because if we do that, it's going to work well. So I decided I made a little machine. See, I just came from this conference, which is incredible, because we're talking about high tech. We got to meet all these great, unbelievable people in the army yesterday who were in a special unit, in the cyber unit. They make the most unbelievable things that are going on. Eventually, they leave the army. They all become millionaires. They don't want to become doctors. Someone said to me, you don't want to be a doctor anymore. That's not a good profession for a Jewish kid. You want to be a high-tech engineer. That's what you want to be. So you could have an exit. I think it's a Hebrew word now. Exit isn't now a Hebrew word because that's what people want to do. You develop something, make it, sell it for a lot of money, and you've done well. So I have my own little machine that I'm putting out. It's called an achdus machine. See, it's very simple. This is the way it works. If you take your blood pressure, well, you take this is the achdus machine. There are two numbers. There's a number on top. There's a number on the bottom. The number on top is Klal Yisrael. It's your yeshiva. It's your shul. It's your community. It's the Jewish people. It's Eretz Yisrael. It's Am Yisrael. When you make a decision, ask yourself the question, is it good for the Jewish people? If it's good for the Jewish people, then it's something you want to do. The bottom number is you. What's good for you? Now, what's the best achdus blood pressure you could have? 100, 0. Every decision you make is what's good for the yeshiva, good for your shul, good for your community, good for Klal Yisrael. And you, whatever it is for you, it is. But okay, we're normal people, so okay, let it be 90-10. It's okay. But when it starts to go the other way, when every decision you make is always good for you, but no one else cares about anything else, and I've been to too many meetings and met too many people to know this is what happens so many times. People make decisions, they make decisions that are good for them, but not necessarily good for everybody else. Oh, we want to have a new shear. Does this time work? Does that time work? What's good for you? What's good for everyone else? So if you start thinking about it in those ways, all of a sudden you find out things are a little bit different. And so, I once wrote an article for the Mishpacha magazine, and it was called, Can We Get Along One Another? And I got tons and tons of emails and calls and so on. A lady sent me an email. I want to read it to you because it's really pretty interesting. She lives in Israel. This is what she says. I asked my husband not too long ago, how are we? He says we're Haredi. How are we different from the Lumi Dati people? See, she said, this is what it is. See, I have a very good friend who would be classified as Lumi Dati. I know this because her boys wear kippah sugot, and they wear colored shirts out of their not black pants. But her daughter went to Beis Yaakov with my daughter. I said to my husband, they learn in yeshiva, they keep mitzvos, why are they different from us? He answers, well, we don't approve of them because they have mixed seating at their simchas. That's the reason we don't approve of them. And so therefore, we're of course different from them completely. I remember one time going to the Plaza Hotel, right here in Yerushalayim. I'm in the Plaza Hotel. I'm on the top floor. Elevator comes. A very nice couple walks in. Very, very nice. Really nice. I asked them, they just got married. He went to Columbia University. She went to Barnard. He's dressed very nicely, a nice pair of pants, colored shirt. She's dressed very tsanua, very, very nice. And they tell me they're here in Israel. They're going to be spending 6 months learning. Then they're going back to the States. Then another couple comes in about two floors later. The guy's wearing a pair of shorts, a little tank top, a little yarmulke about this big. His wife, not dressed that tsanua. Oh, how are you? Where are you from? Oh, I went to graduate of YU, and my wife's from Stern, and we're here, you know, on vacation. We're touring Israel, then we're going to Europe, and so on. Oh, great, wonderful. So we get to the lobby. The first couple says to me, "Can I just ask you a question?" I said, "Yes." I said, "You know, we always thought we were modern Orthodox. What are they?" I said, "You know what? They're Jews. And it's okay. There's no such term as modern Orthodox. I don't know what it means. I'm not quite sure what it means." I met a Haredi guy one day, and I said to him, I said, "No, you're modern Orthodox, because I know that years ago, my great-great-grandparents never wore a shtreimel or a bekesha, and so you did it, so you're more modern than I am. So you're modern Orthodox, and I'm really Hasidic." Okay, who knows? That's what happens when you start getting involved in labels. You see, everyone gets involved in labels, and then once you start getting involved in labels, then anything can happen. So the question is, do you have to work hard to create achdus? Yes. You have to work very hard to create achdus. Let me tell you something that happened to me. In the Orthodox Union, we have many, many shuls under our umbrella. Now, all the shuls are a little different. They're not all exactly the same. They're all a little different. And we had a shul, and the rabbi of that shul decided that he was going to do something very unique. He was going to have a woman lead the services on Friday night. Sounds pretty progressive, right? Well, naturally, the emails started coming in. Get rid of them, throw them out of the union. They don't belong there, and so on and so forth. I said, you know what? Let's first get to the bottom. Why don't we first get some facts about what's going on? And so we started to dig, we started to get some facts. We sent a delegation to meet with the rabbi. The rabbi said, look, he was under pressure. Maybe it wasn't such a good idea. I said, well, look, you know, we have red lines. And maybe you've crossed the red line, and so we really can't have you under our umbrella. But we want to have achdus. We want to have this big tent. What could you do for us? He says, look, you know what? I'm going to change what I did. I'm going to change the policy. But I need a little bit of time. I need a few weeks. I said, great. But during that period of time, calls come in, people tell you what's going on, people tell you what you should do, how you're not Orthodox anymore, but we let it go. And finally, after about a month, we decided, okay, he changed it, he changed his policy, and then I said, but I have to put out a press release. No, don't put out a press release, please. I said, no, I have to put out a press release, but we'll be careful. And so after one whole month of dealing with this, we put out a press release, which is exactly three lines. Very simple. With regard to the matter of a woman leading Kabbalat Shabbat services before an audience of men and women, the position of the Orthodox Union is that such practice is improper and constitutes an unacceptable breach of Jewish tradition. I didn't mention the rabbi's name. I didn't mention the shul. We just made a statement. Were the people on the left happy with what I did? No. Were the people on the right happy? Absolutely not. But did we keep achdus? Yes, we did. Did he stop? Absolutely yes. Did we keep him within the framework of Klal Yisrael? You see, because it's so easy. It's so easy to throw somebody out. We live in a world of instantaneous gratification. You know, I used to say to people, if you're president of an organization, you're involved in communal life, whatever it is, you never get anyone who ever says anything nice about you. And that's just part of the game. It comes with the territory. But you know what? Years ago, I always felt if somebody really didn't like me, I didn't mind that much, because they would have to write a letter, maybe before your time, and then they would actually have to pay money for a stamp. They put a stamp on. They'd have to go to the mailbox and put it in the mailbox. they really had to not like me. But today, you just go to the, you know, to your tablet, you go to your iPad or whatever you go to, boom, 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 psh, send, and there it is. No problem. You don't have to think about it. And so people just like, that's what happens in the world. You see, people love to, there's a mob mentality. And when the mob mentality starts, it never, ever, ever stops. That's what happens. And sometimes we believe what we read in the paper, and those people start to control our life. So, the question is this. We know why Achdus is important. We know why it's imperative. So, why can't we do anything about it? And what could we do about it? So, in my own community, I had come up with a whole batch of suggestions. I'm going to give you some of those suggestions that I came up with, but I had some others I thought about when I was thinking about coming here in the taxi. I said, what are the things that we could do here? You see, because look, this is the problem. The problem is this. Every single person in this room, basically, comes from the same neighborhoods, goes to the same yeshivas, and so you went to this school, and you went to Frisch, or you went to Hank, or you went to DRS, or you went to MTA, wherever you went to, all the same kind of schools. Different schools, but more or less the same. TABC, whatever it is. You live in Teaneck, you live in the Five Towns, you live in LA. Wherever you live, you're basically all together. And then you're going to go and see your friends tomorrow, and they basically go to the same schools, the same yeshivas. More or less everything is together. And then you're going to go to the same camps, and you're going to go to the same communities. You're going to be together. And how do you create a world, an environment, where you get to know other people? Because if you don't get to know other people, you never can solve problems. Because you see, when there's a problem, you don't even know who to call. You don't know who to call. I learned because I'm part of this conference of presidents of major Jews. That's the name of this group, by the way. It's called the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations. You understand there is no minor Jewish organization. Every organization is major, extremely important, it's unbelievable. And in that organization, they also have conservative and reform and so on. And I've gotten to know these people over the years. And I've gotten to be able to talk to them. And they could call me if they have a question. You have to have communication. If you don't have communication, things go really awry. And what happens is that the zealots start to take over the whole world. And when the zealots take over the world, all the normal people lose out. So I said, listen, let's come up with a few good ideas that I thought would make some sense. So, I offered this in my own community. Not one person, by the way, has decided this is going to work. Here's a simple thing I want for my own community. But think about what's going on here, even in Eretz Yisrael. We have shuls. Every Friday night you come to my shul. You have Parshat HaShavua sheet. It's great. Every yeshiva puts out their own sheet. I said, how about we have an idea? Why don't we go and why don't we take all the different yeshivas in the whole community, and why don't we have a little team from each yeshiva and let them meet on a Wednesday night, pick out one or two Divrei Torah from each school, put it out in the community, and make it an Achdus Parshas HaShavua sheet. Guess what? It has Torah from every single boy's yeshiva. Maybe the girls could do the same thing. What would happen? Would it be so bad? Would it be so terrible if they all met together for the first time, got to know one another, and maybe they found out that they like each other, they have a lot in common, that there's not so much disagreement between them, but they really can get along? I thought that was pretty good. I said, well, you know what? I went to the school when my grandchildren was in the fourth grade, I think, learning Mishnayos Sukkah. So they had this wonderful project where the kids all made Apostle Sukkah. And they had it on the computer, they had it on other things. And I found out that every other school in the community had the same thing. I said, why don't we have one big one? Like rent an auditorium. Let's have kids from the fourth grade from all over the whole community. Let them come together and do it. Wouldn't it be great and let one Rebbe speak? Good idea, everyone says. But you know what? Not going to work. I said, okay, how about if we do this? How about if rabbis switch pulpits? You have a rug from one shul, goes to another shul, so on and so forth, and you get to know who the other rabbis are. That seems like a pretty good idea also. What about if you have a series of lectures? Not on controversial... Look, you don't have to meet with people and talk about controversial issues. Don't talk about Yom HaAtzmaut, okay? Talk about the Chag of Purim and what it means to the Jewish people. Talk about Malachas of Shabbos. You can talk about anything you want. There are so many things we could talk about. But could you imagine if another Rosh Yeshiva from another yeshiva that was not in the sphere, the orbit of Torah Tshraga? There's an orbit, the Torah Tshraga orbit, the Shalavim orbit. It's all the orbit, it's all the same. What about if there was another Rosh Yeshiva from another place who came on a Thursday night or a regular night to give a shiur? Nothing controversial, just so you get to meet him and hear him. And if somebody from here was invited to go there, would that be the end of the world? But it would be, because people are afraid. People are afraid to explore new ideas. And so, you know, in my own community, I said, why not people let them have block parties and get to know who their neighbors are? They don't even get to know who their neighbors are. There are so many things that could be done. And there's so many things that you guys could do. Because you see, for me, it's too late. Don't you understand? It's too late. No matter what you mention to people, people say, it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. We can't have it. Does it make sense? Sure. Do you want it? Absolutely. There's no question people want it. Speak to people. Look, put yourself in a position of a parent. You know what? You could call you. When you call your parents, ask them, tell them, say, hey, you know what? We had this crazy guy who spoke in our yeshiva. And he spoke about this topic of achdus. It's like way out. Doesn't make any sense, you know? And this is what he said. He wanted to know whether you as parents would be happy if all of our siblings got along together, or they never spoke to one another and they never talked to one another. Ask them what they would like. I can tell you as a parent and as a grandparent, there is nothing more important than that. If you know your children are together, if you know they're going to take care of one another, and they're going to care for each other, they'll be compassionate for one another, you feel great. You feel wonderful. And when it doesn't happen, you know how you feel? I meet parents and grandparents, their kids don't talk to each other. They feel their whole life is ruined. I paid a shiva call in my own community. I can't believe this. I paid a shiva call in my own community. Someone I know, he has one brother. Parents are Holocaust survivors. Holocaust survivors. I went to pay the shiva call. The father was sitting in the middle. One brother here, one brother here. Looked hard to me, and I asked the brother who I knew, what's going on? I didn't read the body language. And my brother and I haven't spoken in years. Could you imagine parents of Holocaust survivors having two kids and they don't speak to one another? So picture Rabboni Shalom. Picture him looking down and saying, what is going on? My children don't even talk to one another. Sure, they're going to care for each other. God forbid if there's a tragedy, they'll be here and they'll be saying Tehillim together and they'll be doing all kind of acts of chesed, and people will love it and people will talk about it and people will say, achdus, 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 till you can get sick, and you can get sick because it's so much. All you talk about is when it goes good. One of the greatest stories, by the way, of Purim, to me, is at the end of the Megillah. I think that's why we read the Pasuk out loud, by the way. Dover Shalom, Chol Amo. He was basically most of the people were content. Could you imagine? They had prosperity. They were able to destroy their enemy. They had a queen who was Jewish. They had a prime minister who was Jewish. Things were wonderful. And guess what? They basically got along. That may be the greatest miracle of Purim of all. More than anything, getting along when there's problems, easy. Getting along when things are great, not always so easy. So the question really for you guys really is, maybe you could think of ways. Maybe you could come up with an idea. I thought of another idea also, which I thought was a great idea. Most other people didn't think it was a great idea. I thought it was, okay? I said, why don't we have, like, kids get bar mitzvah, girls get bat mitzvah. They get money, they get presents. Why don't we have a tzedakah fair for the whole community? Let's invite all the kids to come, and they have to agree to give 10% maaser from whatever they collected, and let all the different places come and explain what they are and who they are, and let the parents come, let the kids understand what tzedakah is all about. It'll be unbelievable, beautiful. Thousands of kids coming. Great idea. Fantastic. No one ever did it. So what does it take? I was in Chicago. Who's from Chicago here? Somebody's got to be, right? You're from Chicago. Great city, okay? I was in Chicago maybe about 2 years ago. And I spoke in a shul, some shuls on Tui. Okay? It's a big, big place, right?
I was Charles Bacchus. Mm. Charles Bacchus?
Yes. But I was there after. I wasn't there for that Shabbos. I was there about a month later. So I come to Chicago. Everyone's telling me, did you hear about the Shabbos of Achdus in Chicago? It was unbelievable. I said, wow, people explaining to me. They got together and all the shuls got together. They had Chazanim and they had Amalava Malka. So I tried to find out who did it. It was like two people, from what I understand. Two people, the one who did it. That's it. Two people decided they wanted to make it and they did it. It wasn't an organization. It wasn't the OU. It wasn't the Haredis. It wasn't the Aguda. It wasn't the government. It was two people. It doesn't take a lot, don't you understand? It doesn't take a lot. People think that things are going to change because someone on top is going to do it. You know, someone said to me one time, they said, you know, what's the difference between a Rebbe and a rabbi? So this is the difference. See, the Rebbe speaks, and the Rebbe looks at every single person as he's speaking, and he looks in their eyes, and every single person is with the Rebbe, and they know the Rebbe is talking to them. The rabbi gets up and also gives the same speech. You look in everyone's eyes, and everyone says, he's talking to the person next to me. He's not talking to me, he's talking to the person next to me. So I'm not a Rebbe, and I'm not a rabbi. I'm a regular Yid, I'm a regular Pashto Yid, who cares about Klal Yisrael. And I'm telling you that you guys can find a way. I can't do it anymore. I can't. But you guys can find a way. You don't need organizations. You don't need to have a big to-do. Like in Chicago, the Achta Shabbos, it still was beautiful. I came a month later, people were still talking about it. Could you imagine if you could find a way to change the orbits? If there are three or four orbits here in Eretz Yisrael, could you imagine if you can get some of them to come together for Limudei Torah, for Chesed projects, for whatever it is, it doesn't make a difference. You be creative. You decide what you think is best. But if you could do that, you know what you could do? You could change Klal Yisrael. You could honestly change Klal Yisrael. Every single person here has the ability to do that. And you don't have to be the biggest masmid. You don't have to be the best Talmud. You have to be a person who just cares. And then all of a sudden, boom, everything changes. Everything changes overnight. And that's what it's all about. And that's why I wanted to come, because I really thought it's important for young people to hear the message. You could do it. It's up to you. It's not up to me anymore. It's really up to you. And if you want it, it can happen. And it's not only that if you want it, it can happen. It's great for Klal Yisrael. It's imperative for Klal Yisrael. It's what people want. Speak to people and they'll tell you how much they love it when they can get together. I want to end by reading you just something that I read a few years ago in the Jerusalem Post. An article written by Rabbi Emanuel Feldman. Anybody here from Atlanta? No? Okay. Rabbi Emanuel Feldman was the former rabbi there, editor of Tradition Magazine, a fantastic writer, fantastic person. And he lives in Eretz Yisrael. So he was talking about the situation here in Eretz Yisrael, which is even a little much more polarized than in America. Okay? What I'm talking about, maybe do when you come back to America. If not, do it here. Get all the yeshivas together. Find a way. You have some friends. Find some other guys. Put them all together. See what you can do. But here's what he says. He was talking about Achdus. He said, I thought of this recently when I saw a Jerusalem real estate advertisement that said, a home for every hashkafa, every ideology. It listed various homes in different neighborhoods, ranging from Hasidic to Haredi to modern Orthodox to secular and beyond. Whatever a person's ideological, theological requirements, this company had a neighborhood to meet those needs. God forbid you should live in a neighborhood where maybe somebody was a little bit different than you. And he goes on to talk all about it, how it wouldn't be so bad if maybe people lived in different kind of communities, they got to meet different people. And this is the way he ends. And this is how I'm going to end. He all says, we all know why the Mashiach has not yet appeared. The chances are that he's actually here. He's here, right here, waiting right outside in the gates of Yerushalayim. But he can't enter. You know why? Because he doesn't know what to wear. He doesn't know what to wear. So there he stands at the gates of Yerushalayim, ready to enter. And in his suitcase, he has a white shirt. He has black trousers. He has a colorful sweater. He has a sport jacket. He has a long black kapata. He has a black hat. He has a multicolored kippah serugah. Several styles of shtreimlach. He's all ready. But you see, he prefers to travel light. And he cannot enter with his burdensome wardrobe. And so he waits for us to decide what he should be wearing and for us to decide what worldview we should be following. But once he makes it through the gates, he carries in his hands the text of his own real estate ad. Homes available in the new Mashiach ben David community. Regardless of Hashkafa, come as you are, all are welcome. That's how he says. Most beautiful, beautiful thought. So guys, I came tonight not to lecture you, not to talk to you, but to hear with hope. Hope that somebody here, it only takes one person, could take it upon themselves to say, you know what? I can do something to change the history and the destiny of the Jewish people if I want to. Start small, take something easy, make it successful, and before you know it, next thing you know, people are talking to one another. We break down the barriers. Achdus is created. And the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is smiling from heaven and saying, Baruch Hashem, I've been waiting for this for years and years. Have a great, great, great Shabbos and a wonderful Purim also. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Okay.
Sure.